You're listening to episode 74 of Lifestyle Locker Radio with Jason Prowl.
It's kind of what you and I are here to do now is help educate as many people as we can to go down this path of optimal lifestyle, because health is within. It's built within you. It's innate. It's in your DNA. It's already there. We just have to sort of unlock it.
Hi, I'm Dr. Josh Hand, and welcome to the Lifestyle Locker Radio, where we dive into what makes an awesome lifestyle. From relationships to money mindset, nutrition to fitness, emotional health to peak performance, we bring you on an amazing journey to unleashing your human potential. So here's a little bit about our guest today, Jason Prowl. He's a former mechanical engineer turned entrepreneur, filmmaker, and health optimization practitioner. Due to 20 years of his own health challenges, Jason was given the opportunity to discover the reality behind his symptoms. Through this process, he began working remotely with individuals around the world to provide solutions for those suffering from complex health issues. In 2016, Jason transitioned from working an integrated disease care model to a model of health optimization and lifestyle medicine. These lessons are culminated in a free online documentary film series premiering May 7th called The Human Longevity Project, which uncovers the complex mechanisms of chronic disease and aging and the true nature of longevity in our modern world. So here's our guest, Jason. All right, everyone, we have Jason here in the locker room of the Human Longevity Project. Man, we are so excited to have him. Was this guy... This guy is kind of doing, like, we're doing, like, the same things. He's doing on a much different scale and bigger scale, you know, than I think I am. But I'm so grateful to have you here, bud. So, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. It is funny how parallel track we are with just our message and, I think, the way we view things. So, I think this will be a fun combo.
Yeah. So, as you heard in his bio, the Human Longevity Project is this huge project, and it's nine episodes, right? I'm saying it correct, right?
Yep.
Episodes, of learning about what the people that are living the longest, healthiest lives in the world naturally are doing, and what they have been doing for almost a decade, and some more than a decade. So, how did you find yourself into kind of really diving into this world of longevity and wellness and lifestyle?
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, we got the locker room here. I grew up in locker rooms, right? I mean, I was an athlete. I played college baseball, college football. That's where I sort of lived for a while, in the athlete space. And, you know, I was interested in health, interested in nutrition, interested in how to improve my performance, right? I mean, that was really what it was all about. And ultimately I suffered from a lot of injuries. You know, in baseball, it was torn labrums. It was knee injuries constantly. But this was chronic stuff. It wasn't like I, you know, randomly tweak something, right? A torn labrum basically happens over time generally.
Yeah.
And my knee stuff that I was dealing with was patella tendonitis, quote unquote, right? So this sort of itis stuff that I was constantly getting, which basically just means chronic inflammation of the joints and of various things. So it was through all these injuries and through skin issues that I ended up having that sort of forced me down this path of recognizing that Western medicine and the whole paradigm that surrounds quote unquote health in the Western world, in the US, was complete nonsense, complete bullshit. Yeah. And there was no other way for me to sort of recognize that other than to just take it head on and say, okay, well, it's crap, and I've got to figure out the truth, right? And so the truth is a very elusive thing, I will say, but I think from that point of sort of recognizing that I was being lied to and I was being misled, you know, maybe not even lied to, but totally misled, intentionally or unintentionally, that I had to move closer toward the truth, right? And so it's been a long journey for me. Well, you know, we were talking offline, and I was very impressed how your parents raised you in sort of this natural way from the get-go, and everything sort of made sense to you as you went. And I think for a lot of us, that's not the case. Like, we have to, like, figure it out the hard way. And we kind of suffer from that, right? And I think our parents, as much as they loved us, didn't have the tools and the skill sets and knowledge to teach us how to live the optimal lifestyle, right? So I think it's kind of what you and I are here to do now is help educate as many people as we can to go down this path of optimal lifestyle, because health is within. It's built within you. It's innate. It's in your DNA. It's already there. We just have to sort of unlock it, right?
So yeah, 100%.
Kind of how I got into this, and you know, through this sort of integrative functional medicine stuff that I did for a while, I still found that that was disease based. And while that is necessary, and I think that is a good thing, you know, chiropractors and acupuncturists and functional medicine, integrative medicine and complementary medicine, oriental medicine, there are all these medical things, and they are very, very critical. And I think it's great that we're moving more into a holistic integrative thing. But I think we also need more lifestyle education. We need more understanding of how to live in more alignment with nature. And this led to the Human Longevity Project, which was looking at cultures around the world that don't have medical systems, that at least to the scale we do, right? They don't need them. In other words, they still go by this idea that the superb physician treats disease before it occurs, right?
Yeah.
They live in a way that supports health. And if you do that, disease doesn't exist. And so I think that was really what we wanted to show with this documentary film series, was first of all, that aging can look really good. You know, at 95, you can be doing amazing things. We interviewed a 105-year-old in Italy who was riding his bike. I mean, we don't see that here in the U.S. And so I think we wanted to show what aging can really look like, and also that we don't need fancy medical systems, and we don't need more disease understanding. We need more health understanding. And they're two very, very different things, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you're going by this in a really neat way, because it's more of an empowerment than like a scare tactic.
100%. Yeah. And it's tricky because you kind of have to play both sides, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, when and we can get in more into this, but into the cultures that we looked at, they didn't have to, let's say, navigate some of the challenges that we have to navigate here in the modern culture. So for them, in a way, it was easier because they didn't have to think about artificial lighting. They didn't have to think about, is this food organic or not? You know, so in a way, everything was simpler for the cultures that we looked at. And that's important to understand, because we also can't just look at their lifestyle habits and say, oh, I'm going to mimic what they do, because you can't. No matter how much you know, and you understand all this stuff, you cannot mimic them because your environment is totally different. So I think this was also one of the messages that we wanted to convey, was that there's been a lot of great work looking at longevity populations around the world, but we can't forget that we live in a new time. We live in a new era. We live in a totally different environment. And because of that, we have to operate differently. We have to think differently. We have to behave differently. So there's a lot that comes with this sort of new modern technology, modern era, modern society that we have to bring with us. And the key is, what can we steal from them? What kind of knowledge and understanding and wisdom can we take with us going forward? And what do we have to also bring with us that is associated with this new world that we live in?
Yeah, just to go back, like ground back a second, you know, we talk about like the scare tactic versus the empowerment. You know, I was brought, like we were saying before the show, I was brought up vaccine free. I've been in chiropractic. I've been getting adjusted, we'll say, since I'm born. And I remember I was a lifeguard for the town. I got accepted to be a lifeguard. It's a really great pool. And they sat us down because we may have to deal with blood, right? Like some kid may scrape their knee on concrete. So I'm like, yada, yada. They sat us in this room. It was like a projector from like the 1950s. Was really dark, and talked to us about hepatitis B. Like, everybody needs this shot. And I came with my parents. I'm like, this is real? This is really scary? Like, what do I have to do to, like, really? You're asking this question after like 17 years or whatever it was of your life. You're worried about something now? You were running around in dirt, barefoot, and eating worms and whatever you were doing. And now this is going to scare you.
And that there's a really good lesson in that, which is that even though you grew up with an understanding and basically a lack of fear of the world, through very, very simple cultural or group pressure, maybe I would say.
Yeah, manipulation, I would call it.
But you're amongst other people, right? And so imagine being in a situation where you're not afraid of something, but yet 20 people around you are afraid of it. There's something inside you that goes, wait, should I be afraid of this? You know, is this, like, what is this? Because there's something logically says that if 20 people are afraid of this in the room, then I should probably at least have some fear around this, right?
Yeah.
So I think this is what we fall prey to, which is that everybody around me is warning me of these things. Everybody is scaring me about these things. So therefore, there must be some sort of heightened risk here.
Yeah.
And I think this is where we need to break all this down. And the simplest thing we can point to, and the most sort of innocuous, is this idea of bacteria, right? We have all these antibacterial soaps. We have these hand sanitizers. We have the cleaner on the countertop cleaner that's going to kill 99.9% of germs. Like, what the hell is a germ? Like, I thought germ theory was gone, but we're still dealing with this, apparently, right? So, I mean, and it's been shown time and again that, you know, there's more sort of microbiota or pathogens or bacteria on your cell phone than there is on a toilet seat.
Yeah.
And yet, so you know, we're totally screwed up with this thinking. And this is another area that you can look to and go, wow, we've been totally manipulated. And most of it is due to commerce and buying shit and propping up industries that don't need to be there.
Yeah. And it's funny, you say we'll talk about bugs, if you will, or bacteria. You know, another guest I interviewed, he said, a medical doctor, he said, okay, we're 90% bug.
100%.
We're going to try to kill. It's like absolutely. We're killing ourselves. What's going on?
And to me, this is what I think from a scientific perspective. So there's a lot of lessons and things we've tried to package in our film series. Mm-hmm. One of which is a philosophical message about longevity. You know, and I think this is important because right now we're seeing Ray Kurzweil, we're seeing Silicon Valley, we're seeing all these people talking about living forever and curing aging and all these weird concepts, right? And I think we have to sit back and think about that for a sec because, look, if I told you you've been living a really great lifestyle, you've been taught a lot of amazing things and you know a lot of information and you're going to have technology going forward, so the projection for your life is you're going to live 250 years. Now, if I told you that as fact, does that not make tomorrow seem a little less important?
Yeah. It's so like, holy cow, I got that much more time.
Right. It's like, whatever. I got so much time. Like, that's okay. Right. So there's a beauty in the shortness, right? Vic Strecker is an amazing guy at the University of Michigan, one of the experts that we interviewed. And we were talking to him about purpose and how purpose and living a big life. And this is what he teaches at the University of Michigan. And he had a personal experience with this daughter who was born with heart issues. And she had a heart transplant, I think at like 6 months or a year, something insane. Like she was the youngest person at that point to receive a heart transplant successfully. And yet when that happened, apparently they didn't know how long she was going to live. They basically told him literally any day she could die. We don't know. This has never been done.
Yeah.
You know? And so far so good, but nothing's guaranteed. So what is that? So imagine receiving that message about your daughter. Your life is going to change, right?
Yeah.
Philosophically, mentally, emotionally, every day is the most important day.
Like every second is the most important second, right? Wow.
Exactly. You don't know when you wake up tomorrow, is your daughter going to be breathing? I mean, I don't have a daughter or a son, but I'm already sort of like feeling the emotion. Like that's crazy, crazy powerful. So imagine that. And each day, and as she gets older, right, she gets 5 and 6 and 7. Now she has to start learning this message, this understanding. Well, like, hey, you had a transplant when you were 1. By the way, you might not be here tomorrow. Just FYI, you know.
Yeah. This.
And so she grows up, right? So she grows up with this understanding that tomorrow is not a given, that every day is a gift. And we're all told this, but nobody really believes it because we all think we're going to live to 85 or 90 or 100. So it's like, whatever. Yeah, I'm 37. I got 60 more years. Whatever. But she literally had this understanding that tomorrow's not a given. So they were down in Florida. I think she was 17 at this point. Like she's like totally surpassed all these expectations. And she was down there with her boyfriend and the family. So, and apparently, you know, she was talking with her boyfriend and said, you know what? Like she was studying to be a nurse at that point too. And she said, you know what? I'm so happy. Like I literally could die and I'd be fine. And she actually passed away that night.
Wow.
And Vic didn't know that until the next day after when he talked to her boyfriend. And like he broke down. Like that was it for him, right? Like that's all he wanted. Like that was so powerful that she was happy. That's all she needed to be was happy. She only got 17 years. So you could look at that and say she got shortchanged. Or you can say this girl lived an amazingly powerful life that changed the way her dad operated from then on. In fact, he almost committed suicide, I guess. Like he kind of had this process. He literally like went into a canoe into like Lake Michigan or something like that. And just like to the point where it was like a suicide thing. Like he knew that like he was paddling out on this canoe
and might not come back.
Exactly. And he was, you know, he was going through trauma. He was re-experiencing this. And he sort of, you know, kind of explains this in our film, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't think it made the film, but it's in our full length interviews. And he's telling this story. And he says, you know, I basically felt her at that point. I got a message from her. I don't know how to explain this. It wasn't a talking message. I just knew that I was supposed to go back and change the way I was teaching at the University of Michigan. So literally he goes, wakes up the next day and teaches as if every day, every person was his daughter. And so anyway, short life, amazing, big life, changes the way he teaches all of his students. He's in the film. He shares this message. You see what I'm saying? Like there's this ripple effect of such a short life.
Yeah.
So
this, yeah. Wow.
From 17 years. So that's just one example of living a short but powerful life, a big life, right? So I think the message of longevity, even though it's called the Human Longevity Project, is sort of, we got to reframe it. And, you know, if you're living 150 years and you hate yourself and you're mean to everybody around you and you're poisoning the planet, is that really worth it? Do you really want to live 150 years?
God.
Or if you live 62 years and you impact so many people and you enjoy every single day and you have a purpose, whatever that means to you, I mean, that seems to be you're treating the planet with respect and treating people with respect. And to me, that's more important. So we have to get into the philosophy of longevity, right? But the other, so there's a long sort of tangent, but what I was getting at, based on your last comment, was that we need to think about ourselves as more than just the human. We are, as you stated, as the experts that you talked to stated, we are more microbiota than anything. In fact, you're more virus than anything. We have more viral, you know, RNA or genetics than we do human genes. And so most of our functions coded for and carried out through microbiota. So you don't do much of anything. This is actually the beauty of the human genome. We've literally given these tasks to our microbiota. Okay, here, produce these B vitamins. Okay, here, produce, you know, this vitamin K2, produce all these things, do all these things, create these neurotransmitters for us, right?
Yeah, it's pretty neat. This,
right? So we've literally like outsourced this gene coding and gene function to our microbiota. And so if that's the case, which we now recognize to be true, then we should probably take care of those guys. And maybe we should switch from this egocentric standpoint of what are my genes doing and what are my genes saying and what are my genes, you know, that exist there. And let's think about the genes and the information that's elsewhere. You know, the mitochondria, for example, have genes. The microbiota that's in and on and around you do most of the things for you. They have genes. The food that you eat has genes that talk to our genes. So if we get out of this egocentric standpoint and instead think about not ourselves, but rather our microbiota, that's our inner ecosystem.
Yeah.
We think about our outer ecosystem being the environment and the people, and we just take care of those things and don't take care of ourselves, then we become the beneficiaries of all that, because what we put out into the environment gets reflected back to us.
Yep.
And what we give to our inner environment and the health of our inner environment will then keep us healthy.
It expresses back out.
Exactly. So. Yeah. And we totally change our perception and our mindset from a selfish standpoint to one of sort of altruism. You're taking care of everything else and everybody else. And this has ramifications, I think, psychologically and mentally. When you stop concerning yourself with yourself, but rather with everything and everybody else, it's amazing what happens. We get all the benefits when we do that. So, so I think we have to shift our thinking.
Yeah. My father's philosophy growing up, like he would teach us, he goes, two things. Like, you can never outgive the giver was the one thing, which is kind of what you're saying. And second, he goes, the more you give, the universe will always give you back tenfold. You may not know where it's coming from or what it is, but that's just the way the world works. You know, people that are constantly in the taking zone, it doesn't usually work out too well.
Yeah. And that's just it. And so one of the concepts that I think, and I don't know if this is true, it resonated with me, but a concept that I heard at some point, and I was like, wow, that's powerful, was that the way nature operates is it gives and it regives. Doesn't take. There is no take in the way nature or universe or the sort of the natural order of things. And so it's more of a give and a regive. There's no way to actually take anything from a nature standpoint. And there's some debate there.
Like a leaf falling to the ground, like growing and then falling to the ground and then becoming part of the ground. And then
everything's giving and regiving. And the death of anything is regiving to life. Right. I mean, this is, we know this, to be true.
Yeah.
So there is no take. It's a matter of there is abundance all around and you have the ability to give and then things will re-give to you. There is no need to sort of take. Right. And so, again, I don't know if this is true. It resonated with me. And I think it speaks to basically what you were saying, which is that whenever you give, you will receive 10 times more because something is giving to you. So I think it's just a powerful concept. And I think there's so much research, actually scientific research showing that when we focus our energy on healing others, even with just our mind or our emotions or our prayer type of things, we actually receive more benefit. So if I meditate and I focus my energy on I hate this sort of sending thoughts and prayers because it's sort of a deep kind of falls on deaf ears to some degrees, but like there is an intentional healing aspect.
Oh,
and
this totally.
It's been studied, right? So this is not woo-woo anymore. This has been duplicated time and again in research that when I sit with intention and offer you healing, I actually heal myself more than I'm able to even heal you. So I don't know how all this works. All I know is I continue to see example after example and message after message that giving and thinking about others and trying to help others is really the most powerful things we can do for ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, energy is everything down to like the atomic or electron or whatever it is, the smallest level you could think of. It's that quantum world. Everything's energy. So up to what we can actually, you know, touch on our body. So yeah, I mean, it is kind of woo to people, but it's been able to be measured mostly. I mean, you can't have that, like that God particle. If you can't measure that, but you can measure like that intent. What is it? There was a study with water, I think, right?
Oh, absolutely. So this is one of the most fascinating things. Like water has been shown to hold memory. And not only like for a brief period, like supposedly there's ideas and thoughts out there that water quote unquote doesn't forget. In other words, memory component to it, from everything that it touches. And I don't know if that's true, but what we do know is that water does hold memory for sure. It acts like a crystalline nature, a crystalline structure. So it literally acts like a crystal, and we know crystals store energy. Mm. I mean, this is not woo-woo science anymore. This is actually real hard science that we store energy through crystal matrix. And this is what microchips, I mean, we use this all the time. So water acts like that. And through Gerald Pollack's work and Gilbert Ling's work and Nguyen Ho's work and Luc Montagnier's work, who won a Nobel Prize. I mean, we have all these water researchers showing that the structure of water and its crystalline-like matrix is capable of storing energy. And when you, like, there's been research that shows that when you, if you were to say loving, kind words to water.
Yeah, that's the study I was thinking of, right?
And then you freeze it. It freezes into sort of a beautiful snowflake, if you will, like a beautiful crystal.
Yeah, they can look with it like an electron microscope and see.
Absolutely. And you can see it. You play Beethoven to it. It'll form into another beautiful crystal. When you yell curse words at it and inflammatory stuff at it, it will distort and it freezes in this distorted, ugly kind of form.
Yeah.
So this has been shown time and again. There's been experiments where you take an apple, you cut it in half, you put them in different rooms, you yell at one and you speak kind words and loving words to the other. And the one that you yell at and you hate will actually brown faster, will actually rot faster.
Yeah.
You can do this with plants. You can do this with two plants. Put one in a room and say loving, kind words to it and yell profanities at the other one. And you will see differences that one will grow healthier and look better. I mean, this has been shown time and again, right? And there's really no reason to think that it would be any other way. So we can get all woo woo with this stuff or not, but science is showing us this stuff now. Yeah. The cultures from the past have been saying this. Shaman cultures that exist currently have said this and are still saying this. We probably should just start listening instead of debating and trying to have science prove something to us that is already kind of known by everybody
else. Yeah, for thousands of years. It's not like
there's no risk in quote unquote believing this stuff. Like people are only hurting themselves when they say, no, 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 I don't believe it. You have to prove it to me. And it's like, look, if I got to prove it to you that going for a walk in nature is going to change your neurotransmitters, your brain state, your states of depression, your mitochondrial function, then, you know, like you're going to be waiting a long time for, and instead of just going and getting the benefits.
Yeah.
So exactly. This, we need to start opening up to the way we work.
Yeah. And this, keep going. I don't want to interrupt you. I'm just thinking basic. Ahead.
Yeah, no, it's just so basic. And I think this is the empowerment message, right?
Yeah.
If we are relying on science to prove something to us, that somebody out there holds some key, some message, some understanding that's so profound that I need to have it, you know, brought upon me through scientific research and discovery, then I'm going to miss the opportunity to empower myself and to create health. I wouldn't even say create health, because it's already being created. You just got to get out of the way and allow it to sort of develop and foster that health, right? Because it's like a seed. You know, when you plant a seed in the ground, it's not like the seed has to read a bunch of ebooks to learn how to grow into a plant. It doesn't have to download the latest podcasts, even though this is great.
Yeah.
But this is the point, is that it's already there, you know, and it's built within the genetic code. And so long as the environment is correct, there's nothing stopping that thing from becoming a healthy plant.
Yeah. No, we use the analogy as like a walnut to a walnut tree, like this huge monster tree, like all the intelligence is inside this little itty bitty thing is going to become that massive tree at some point, given no interference, right?
That massive tree will provide shade for other plants. It will provide nutrients for other plants. The root structures and the fungus and the whole ecosystem that tree's roots provides
from that little seed
will communicate to other plants. So the roots literally communicate via myco kind of networks, through fungal networks under the ground. We've seen this now. Fungal networks actually work like neurons in the brain.
Yeah.
They communicate between trees. So trees literally talk to one another that give information about the environment. And it does this through fungal networks and this sort of electrical transmission through the ground. I mean, this is crazy stuff.
I think they made a cartoon. I'm not sure how old you are, but it was called like Fern Gully back in the day.
I remember the name, but I totally don't remember.
I think that's what they were envisioning, this same type of thing that we're talking about that's showing up that's real.
We have to recognize that all living things communicate to one another. And when we start to understand that, then we can think about things in the right way, in my opinion. And when I say right way, there is no right way. There's only a way that you decide what's good for you. And most people want health and vitality and these type of things. And so that, to me, that is the natural way. If you want that, recognize that your being, your inner ecosystem, your mind, your thoughts, your words, everything is connected. And so when we start to harmonize with that, gosh, like the power that comes with that, and the responsibility that comes with that, but the power that comes with that is truly mind-blowing. I mean, the fact that your mind can change your disease state, basically irrespective of time, is a really weird concept, but it's been shown time and again, and this is what we need to open ourselves up to.
Yeah, and there's really cool science that's coming out, like I think I'm not sure if it's every 6 months or so, but Dr. Joe Dispenza
Trust me, I tried to get him for our film. He's just like impossible to get a hold of.
Yes, he is.
Because he's so busy doing his workshops and everything. But Dr. Dispenza, Bruce Lipton has shown tons of this stuff. You know, you can get into more of the woo-woo side. And Greg Braden does some pretty cool, interesting work with DNA and light and thought and emotion.
Yeah.
There's Lynn McTaggart, who's got some pretty cool quantum mind type stuff. We've seen the Maharishi effect play out time and again, which is this idea that a bunch of people can coordinate and meditate on peace and love and compassion and sort of these type of qualities, and the crime actually reduces.
Yeah, that butterfly effect across.
I mean, but like that's amazing, right? The fact that we can just take 1,000 people, have them meditate, and that's going to impact crime rates. I mean, it's almost like laughable how weird that is.
Yeah.
But it's been done time and time again. Mm-hmm. So either that's really weird coincidences happening like 14 or 15 times that have been studied, or something's really happening there. And so, you know, I think, again, the goal here is not to go in the deep end in terms of science and health, yes, because that's what we cover in the film, but we need to recognize the power that we hold. And I think that's really the point I'm trying to make here. I think we're probably both on that same, yeah, same wavelength, where it's like, look, like we have the power, and part of that power, you know, and part of the responsibility that we have is just to do the simple things. So we don't even need to think in these big grandiose terms. It's like, how do I feed my microbiota? How do I not poison the planet around me? How do I reduce and simplify my life so that I'm not using as much, right? Yeah. So all these little things. And how do I fix relationships with those around me? How do I foster really good ones? How do I excommunicate any bad relationships that they can't be mended? How do I offer forgiveness and compassion to others? How do I speak to others? How do I speak to myself? How do I think about myself? Do I like the way I look? Do I like the way I feel? Do I like who I am? Do I view my personality as me, or is my personality sort of this thing that's been created through my experiences that I can shed if I would like, right? So there's a lot of things that I think we can look at that are very simple in terms of practical application. And in my opinion, they all factor into our health. So if you're dealing with autoimmune disease or cancers, or you're a freaking athlete and you want to perform better, these are all the same things, right? We're talking about health and vitality. And this is the beautiful part, is that whether you're quote unquote sick or whether you're quote unquote healthy, doing more healthy things is a good thing.
Yeah, totally. So if you're all listening and you're digging this conversation, kind of all the different directions it's going in, but kind of really, it's really going in one direction, believe it or not.
You do, right?
Right. May 7th, humanlongevityproject.com. You have to go. We'll actually drop some links in the show notes. I just wanted to put that in there at least once before we kind of go through here.
Just a quick question on that, though. It's actually humanlongevityfilm.com.
Oh, sorry. I'm looking at the – yep, sorry.
Oh, it's okay. It's sort of our part. It's confusing. We should have changed that. But no, it's humanlongevityfilm.com. And you can sign up now for any kind of updates too. So
May 7th, people. May 7th.
Excited. Yeah, and we do cover a lot. And it's not all geeky science, but there's enough, I think, that your audience will probably dig it. Because we wanted to explain some of this stuff. And the reason that we got a little, we wanted to cover science so much was because, I think you would probably agree with this, that some of the most powerful things we can do are so simple, right? So let's just take, for example, circadian rhythm. And this idea that your body operates on a 24-hour cycle that's guided mostly by the light, right? So we need light to tell us what time of day it is, and our body's going to turn on cortisol at this time and turn on melatonin at that time and turn on and improve testosterone and digestive function and pancreatic function and liver and thyroid. All these are guided by the time of day, right? So you don't want to be you want your bladder filling up in the middle of the night. So there's mechanisms that we, like, our body and our brain, like, turn on and off to make that happen, right? We don't want to be well, there's a lot of things. We want our body to function. I didn't want to go there. Never mind. But we want our body to function at the right time of day, and the light guides that. So let's just get practical here. What can we do to improve our circadian rhythm, which will improve our sleep, which will improve our testosterone and our estrogen levels and our progesterone levels and our thyroid levels and all these things? Well, you get up, when you wake up in the morning, you go outside and you get 15, 20, 30 minutes of daylight in your eyes. You go for a walk, 15, 20 minute walk. You get daylight in your eyes and on your skin. That tells your brain what time of day it is. And it says, okay, it's 7:30 a.m. We know what to do now. We're going to turn on this. We're going to turn off that. Wow. Time to get this going, right? And your clock gets set. And then at night, you avoid hopefully all artificial light as you can, especially in the blue-green spectrum. Because if you were camping at night in a natural setting, you might see the moon, the stars, and a fire. You would never see blue light. It's kind of impossible. Because the blue does not get into sort of our atmosphere. The sun is sort of set. So it's just not there. And yet in our modern world, that's all we see is blue light from our screens, from our overhead lights, from our TVs, from our phones, etc. So that light spectrum difference is now changing our brain's perception of what time of day it is. So by reducing those artificial lights at night, now your brain goes, okay, I know what time of day it is. It's night. We need to start really ramping up melatonin. We need to change all of our hormonal function. We need to downregulate thyroid. We need all kinds of things, right? And so, and you turn on repair mechanisms, and you turn on all kinds of things that should be happening at night. And so from a practical standpoint, all I said was go outside in the morning, get light, and at night, turn off the artificial lights.
Yeah.
That's very simple. But in order to understand how powerful that is, we have to get into all kinds of biochemistry, biophysics. Yeah. Right? I mean, you clock genes. You've got literally have genes in every cell of your body that dictate the function of that cell. Forget the organ. I'm talking about the cell.
Yeah.
And then when we look at organ levels, things like thyroid, there's 1,000 genes that are guided by circadian rhythm that turn on and off. That's just in the thyroid alone. So somebody has low thyroid function, right? Hypothyroidism, they might have Hashimoto's, whatever it might be that's sort of related to the thyroid. Well, if your circadian rhythm is off, you're doing yourself a disservice. You know, you first fix that. I've seen people's cortisol rhythms and melatonin rhythms all over the place. I've seen their methylation a mess. I've seen all kinds of estrogen dominance and poor estrogen metabolism.
Yeah.
We fixed circadian rhythm, ran the Dutch test, which is a dried urinary test for comprehensive hormones, and everything gets corrected by just fixing circadian rhythm.
Yeah.
So in order to explain the simple, we have to get into the geeky. And yeah. I could just tell you to eat organic whole fruits and vegetables as a primary food source for your health. And that sounds pretty lame. Like, oh, I've heard that before. But what if I told you that the kiwi fiber on the peel of the kiwi and inside the kiwi feeds a species of microbiota of bacteria in your gut that makes up about 7 to 10% of your gut bacteria. And when that species is prevalent, you have a really low incidence of Crohn's and colitis and all these things. All of a sudden, the Crohn's and colitis patient says, shit, let me get some kiwi fiber.
Yeah, exactly. So,
there's really cool stuff that we need to understand. You know, if we eat something like white rice or plantains or cassava, this, due to the starches in there, will feed our microbiota. They produce short-chain fatty acids like butyrate. Butyrate acts as in a number of ways. One, it provides energy to the colonocyte, to the colon cells, to repair the colon cells. So they have direct energy source coming from basically fat by way of eating plantains. And that's healing your gut, you know, and then that butyrate is also signaling to mitochondria, telling mitochondria what to do. And mitochondria are, of course, the energy powerhouse of the cell. They dictate a lot of the redox potential and the bioenergetics of the cell and DNA function and methylation and acetylation and all these things basically function in association with mitochondria. So the mitochondria needs to know what's happening in the outside world. And the mitochondria gets that information from the gut bacteria primarily and through the food. So the gut bacteria talk to the mitochondria via things like butyrate or hydrogen sulfide or nitric oxide or reactive oxygen species. So all of a sudden, this idea of saying, okay, eat lots of good, you know, organic plants carries a lot more weight when we understand that it's feeding the microbiota and the microbiota's health and function is doing so many things. Now it's like I'm looking at that plantain going, not is this going to raise my blood sugar, but damn, that thing's going to feed my microbiota. And I know that short-chain fatty acids can be produced to heal my gut. And I'm getting all this amazing stuff, right? So we look at food differently when we think about things in a different way. And instead of this macronutrient nonsense and this idea that foods are bad, now we can think about them in a different way. And this speaks to vitality. It speaks to the sort of holobiont theory that we are the combination, the totality of all the organisms that live within us and on us. We can all work together and think about this all in a different way, right? So it's science, but it's also practical, and it also explains why these people in these areas that are living really long time in a healthy way, why their habits are impactful, why those things are working.
Yeah.
Right? So that's, I think, the important thing. So we can take that understanding and carry them forward instead of just try to mimic them, because you can't mimic them. They live in a way that you and I can't live anymore, nor would we really want to, perhaps. So if we understand why that stuff worked, now we can take it forward in whatever way makes sense based on our modern culture.
Yeah, this is really interesting. I want to circle back for a second because your knowledge is like blowing my mind. Already, you know, like what you know. I mean,
I talked to a lot of smart people. That's all.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you've interviewed some amazing people. I'm sure before and during the series here. in your past, was there like a pivotal point? Was there a point like that you felt like mortal where you're like, okay, my path has now been carved for me. Like I know where I'm going.
So yeah, that was actually, it's a weird story about that. And it sounds really egotistical.
who cares? We're real here. Let's just be, you know.
It's just sort of embarrassing to some degree because it's like, I actually didn't have this conscious thought. It actually just like, first of all, where does the thought come from? I don't know. I don't think anybody knows where a thought comes from or what a thought really is. Yeah. And yet I had this random thought. As I quit my job in engineering, as a mechanical engineer for 10 years, I quit my job. I sold my home. I sold a lot of my stuff. And I had everything in a car and I was driving down to Southern California to sort of open my business as a health practitioner of some sorts, of which I don't know. And I don't have a full plan to execute. I just knew I wanted to get into this field. And I'm driving down. I was coming from Seattle. So I was in like Northern California, Southern Oregon, something like that. You know, I mean, long drive. And I was by myself and I'm just driving. I'm not really in deep thought. I just had this random thought come to me that said, you know, you're supposed to be part of the change. You're supposed to be a key figure in the change of health in the U.S. And like I said, that sounds really egotistical, and especially with somebody without a plan, without a background, without anything. I was like, I didn't know what to do with that. I was like, wow, that's, and I actually remember thinking that's really self-centered. Like that's really, I felt icky, you know, with that thought.
The voice was talking to you.
Yeah. But I was like judging myself. Yeah. Right. And I sort of still am obviously you can hear it. And so I didn't know what to do with that. But at that point I knew that no matter how grandiose sort of that thought was, or that message was that this is what I was going to do. I found what I was supposed to do, you know? And that was kind of the point. And I didn't know what the hell I was doing at that point. And I stumbled and I worked in very small ways and I was working with individuals and, you know, just these type of things. And then it kind of expanded and I did a podcast and then, you know, I just kind of kept growing and growing and I started meeting people and then it sort of culminated in this at this point. And I don't know where it goes from here, but I do know that 100%, like this is what I'm supposed to do is be a part of this growing movement. And I don't foresee me leading anything more of rather just being a part of this thing. And I think it's cool. And I love sort of riding the wave because there's so many people that are changing the game. And I think people like you and me are just acting as hopefully megaphones and sounding boards and voices, right? To sort of amplify this whole message that seems to be wanting to be expressed by universe right now. And I don't know why, but it's very fascinating to me to see this thing. Cause how old are you, by the way?
38.
Oh, you're good. Wow. You look good for 38. So you're a little, you look younger than me. But I remember a time not too long ago when organic food was not, and you may not know this cause you grew up in the healthy world. But if you're aware of everybody else around you that like organic food wasn't a thing, like you couldn't go to Costco and get organic food. You couldn't go to Walmart and get organic food. Like you couldn't even go, you had to go find a co-op or some sort of farmer's market to go to organic food. And now it's everywhere. So it's changed so fast and it's cool to see this movement become cool. And I think that, let's say, the non-hippie normal people are starting to get into it, right? It's starting to get popularized, which brings with it some bastardization, but that's okay because the more people get into it, I think that once the Kardashians start eating organic, I think
we're done. But that's interesting because, you know, in your series, you have a section on community. And I feel that the generations, even though like the millennial generation, they like to make noise.
100%. Right?
So if they start to recognize this message and make noise, I think that it'll start to like push upstream
a little bit,
you know, was my, you know, my group of, or my generation, I should say. I mean, I see people that I was in high school with and I see people, you know, younger and older than me that look like they've been to hell and back. And it's not that they don't have money.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them are way well better off than me. But I mean, I've seen people die of heart attacks at younger than me. I'm like, this guy, what are people, do people not recognize that there's a problem?
Yeah, I think it's our generation that is sort of the ones that are, you know, this isn't exclusive, but I think our generation seems to be the ones that are really having to shift the, having to like sort of turn the ship.
Yeah.
I think the next generation is going to be the ones that are like, yeah, you guys are all idiots. You guys did things wrong for a long time. We're going to do our things our own way. Right. I think that's what we're seeing. It's like, screw you guys. You guys are idiots. We have technology. We know what to do. Like, we're going to do this. And I think the cool thing is about the young generation is they don't have a mentality of like, things are hard and how do I solve it? It's like, no, I can do anything. I can create an app in no time. I can create this. I can do this. I can start my own business. Like, it's like the possibilities in their minds to me are like so impressive. You know, I grew up, it wasn't like that. You know, I mean, to start your own business was very difficult. You know, it's not like people weren't doing it, but it was just so much harder without the internet. You know, because I didn't have a cell phone when I was 18 years old. You know, I mean, like, it didn't exist. You know, so I mean, we had Zach Morris on this, like, you know,
exactly, a brick,
right? Exactly. So the possibilities are so radically different, and I think the younger generation sees that, and they don't know what it's like from our generations and before of like how hard things were to fight, you know. And so I think it's really cool to see, and I don't know where it's going to go, but I agree. I see our generation as sort of in a weird struggle, and
the
I think
rudder almost,
yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of people suffering, and part of it is due to the environment. This is one of the powerful lessons that I learned in when we traveled to these other places like Costa Rica and Greece and Okinawa and all these places, was that you're really a product of your environment. And even somebody like you, who was raised with all this awareness and sort of understanding to a large degree, are still a product of your environment. Mm-hmm. And the hard part about that, and now you can change your environment, hopefully integrate and find community that is doing like-minded things. Mm-hmm. But I'll illustrate it with this point. You may know of a healthy way to do something, but everybody around you is doing the unhealthy thing. Is it better to separate yourself from the group and do the healthy thing? Or is it better to be amongst the group and do the unhealthy thing? And I don't know the answer. Because we know that excluding yourself from the group, whether you're the only person fired from a company, so there's a study that, sorry, I'm bouncing all over
this. That's good. It's good.
There was a study that was done that showed that when one person got fired from a job, they had elevated levels of depression and anxiety and all these sort of negative sort of feelings, right? When the entire company got fired or that entire group got let go, it wasn't nearly as bad.
They're a community again.
Yeah. So in other words, like when you feel excluded, when you're the last kid picked on the kickball team, right? When you're the one left out, this is when we feel like shit. This is what really damages our health because it changes our psychology, our nervous system function changes, right? All this stuff shifts when we are sort of excluded and don't feel like we belong. And so the question then becomes, is it better for our health to sort of feel like we fit into something and do something a little less healthy or a little more unhealthy versus excluding ourselves and doing the healthier thing? It's a very tough thing. And look at our culture. It's not really all that healthy.
Yeah.
And when you're the only one wearing blue blockers in a room, in a bar, like, you know, or out at dinner, you're kind of weird. Right. Exactly. And so even you know better. You know that wearing orange blue blocker, you know, as Ben Greenfield says, what does he call it? I forgot what he says. Something like a condom for your head or something like that.
Yeah. he's so funny.
But you know, when you know better, even I know better. Yeah. And yet I don't go out and like wear blue blockers in public because I feel excluded. Now, part of that's on me, right? It's like, those are my feelings. But at the same time, there is a product of your environment. And in these places like Costa Rica, it was so easy to be slow. It was so easy to walk places. Mm-hmm. It was so easy to be amongst the environment. And when we were down there and we were working 10 days, we had to find these like 100-year-olds. Like I'd try to find a 100-year-old in a foreign country in a language you don't really speak very well. Not easy. You can't email them. There's not a list.
Yeah.
There's a database of 100-year-olds. So we're trying to find these people. We had limited time to do so. So we're working, and yet I felt like I had time to slow down and stopped. It was serene. It's not like we were on vacation 7 miles away. We were working, checking emails. I had Facebook. I had communications. I was setting things up. I was, you know, looking to the future for setting up other things. And yet I felt like I was relaxed and things were flowing smoothly. And then as soon as we got back to the U.S., nothing had changed. Not my schedule hadn't changed. Like nothing had changed. And yet I felt like I was late for everything. And I can only explain that as being in the environment and the environment's impact on you. And so it's really interesting when we look at these other places that they don't have to try to be healthy. They just are healthy because their environment supports that. Whereas our environment doesn't really support it. Another great example is siesta, right? So many people are familiar with this concept in Italy and Greece, and there's sort of this Mediterranean idea of siesta where at noon or so or one, you take about an hour or two break from your workday. Mm-hmm. And like, so if you're in one of these villages, societies that does this, that practices this, like you, there's nothing you can do at 1 or 2 p.m. because everybody's sleeping or taking a break. So you can't, so even if you wanted to conduct business or do things, like, sorry, nothing's open.
Tough.
So that is the environment impacting your behaviors. Mm. And so if your entire environment is taking a siesta at noon or one, what do you think you're probably going to do? Yeah. Are you going to be the only one working in the field or building something? No, you're going to just take a siesta.
Yeah.
So this is, we have to change society, and changing society happens at the individual level. And so as we individually start to change and our values start to shift and our focus and awareness and mindfulness practices shift, society shifts. As society shifts, it then sort of feedback, the feedback cycle of us is now improved and quicker, right? So we can see how this would progress in the future. And that's kind of what I see happening slowly, but I think it's increasing.
Well, I'm going to throw a little knuckleball into that for a second. So let's say I'm the guy wearing my blue blockers and I go out to a bar, whatever, bar, restaurant, and I'm wearing these orange or yellowish glasses out there and I'm hanging out with people. And now I become almost, I almost like a virus, but people start coming over like, well, what's going on? What are you doing? What's the deal? And then you just start to create, I mean, that might be part of like a little bit of like a little shift, like little sprouts going off. Like, this guy's onto something. Like seeing Dave Asprey. I mean, come on.
Yeah, Asprey's kind of a poster child for that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, he's always trying to put something on his head. Yeah, I think absolutely. And so I think, and so what's the difference there? The difference is one person might be going in there saying, okay, I don't fit in with these blue blockers because they're weird and nobody else is doing it. And I know that versus the other person going, I'm going to go wear these. I'm going to draw some attention. And I'm going to talk to people about what the hell this weird thing is on my face. Right. So that's a shift in mindset and sort of perspective. Okay. Right.
That's
and
just so, me. I was the guy walking around with a spine on my back when I was trying to start my practice, you know.
So I think that comes with confidence and knowing who you are and trusting, you know, in sort of yourself, you know. So
yeah,
I think
true.
And that's a journey I think we all have to kind of go through because I think many of us in third grade were afraid to raise our hand. We're kind of taught to be afraid to be the person exposing themselves, right? It's like you don't want to show people how vulnerable or how stupid or that you don't know something, right? So it's this vulnerability I think we have to sort of embrace again. But I totally think that's the case. And, you know, Bulletproof Coffee, right? Just to plug Dave, I guess, a little bit more. But it's another one where people – it's kind of this weird thing. Putting butter in coffee.
It's right there.
But what I noticed was sort of a behavioral patterns and behavioral economics was that people were putting butter in their coffee and they were sort of like – shouting it from the rooftops. Like, in other words, like, oh, what is this? Oh, it's butter in my, you don't know? You don't put butter in your cup? You know, it's almost like, you don't know, right? So like people were like kind of proud of the fact that they were doing this weird thing. So I think it speaks to what you're talking about, sort of these blue blockers. It's like, oh, you don't know about blue blockers? Well, you know that light's killing you, right? You know, these type of things where you now know something. So I think you're right. I think that is going to continue to happen. But it's still... I think this is sort of a unfortunate way to look at things, but I think it's reality of science and of perception and of culture, which is that older generations generally tend to have to die off, and new generations come up, and you know this sort of shifting of
it's that circle of life we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, and as those sort of mindsets and paradigms die off, if you will. Then it sort of allows for the birth of new mindsets, new paradigms, new societies. And so I think that's what we just have to go through. I think we have to go through this idea that you know, my parents' generation who fully believed in government and fully believed in vaccinations and fully believed that, you know, everything they were telling them was totally true and that they got their back, you know, that whole mindset has to die off to some degree. And some are capable of shifting, you know, and opening themselves up but it's very difficult. And so I think that's just part of the cycle that we have to kind of allow those things to die off.
Yes, so you better start holding tight onto that rudder, boy.
Exactly right.
I'm pushing you. You can pull.
Yeah, it's shifting fast. So, you know, it's cool to see, but I think the danger that we have to be wary of is, and this is not a fear-based message, this is just an awareness-based message, that technology is a double-edged sword, and it's getting sharper and sharper by the day. And what do I mean by that? 5G is around the corner, right? This 5G cellular network is around the corner. In my opinion, it is an absolute disaster waiting to happen from a health perspective. Mm-hmm. It is a crisis. And I know that's sort of dramatic, but it's 40 times stronger than 4G. It is going, the ideas that are floating around right now, putting it on every street corner of New York City in these little micro towers, balloons, Wi-Fi and cell balloons floating around our atmosphere, beaming shit from satellites and planes. And I mean, we have these, this is where technology, we're so smart. And so we have so many cool ideas that we're just doing stuff to make things convenient and to sell more shit. Mm-hmm. So it's all commerce based. It is, this idea of convenience is killing us, and it will continue to kill us. And you look at the places that we studied in Okinawa and Costa Rica, their life was exactly the opposite of convenient. It was simplistic. It was doing only the things that made sense. Now we're just doing stuff to do stuff. Mm-hmm. We're literally doing things that don't need to be done. And we're completely killing the environment because of it. And we're killing ourselves, and we're killing the bees, and we're killing the trees, and we're killing the sea life. We're destroying everything around us. And remember what we said before, that we are an ecosystem, inner and outer. We can't live without, I mean, if the bees die, we die. I mean, it's just a fact.
Yeah.
And they're almost die. I mean, they're almost dead. I mean, the bee population is really, really in bad shape.
Yeah.
And this is not good. And a lot of this has to do with GMOs and glyphosates and, you know, some of the things that I won't get into, but it's all man-made crap.
It's true. And
we have to be aware that just because we can change genes of, I mean, they're talking about genetically engineering mosquitoes, and this is not a good idea, guys. Like, what are we doing? So just because we can doesn't mean we should.
Exactly.
I mean, CRISPR-Cas9 technology coming out, which is gene editing, we are going to get into a lot of crazy stuff. And if we don't have the philosophy, that we are a part of nature, that we must align with nature, that we are an ecosystem, and that nature figured it out for us, and we just got to follow her rules and her guidance. If we don't have that philosophy, that understanding, we are going to make a lot of bad decisions, because technology is getting crazier and crazier and cooler and more attractive than ever before. When you can download an HD video in 4 seconds on 5G while you're sitting on a bus going to work, that's cool stuff. But when that bus is radiating you with 5G because it's got a new little mini
tower
inside of it.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing this in planes. Think about a plane. Okay. I used to work for Boeing, by the way. I'm very intimately familiar with plane constructions. And you, aside from the new composite stuff, you essentially got a metal tube with Wi-Fi in it. I mean, if that doesn't sound like a microwave, I don't know what does.
Yeah. Wow. Thanks.
I mean,
thanks.
Yeah. And you're already at 30,000 feet getting cosmic radiation at levels that humans had never seen until they invented the airplane. So we can take the view of like, oh my God, we're all doomed. Or we can just be aware that, yes, I'm still going to continue to fly. And yes, I'm going to get bombarded with EMFs in a microwave tube as I fly at 30,000 feet getting bombarded by cosmic rays. Because of that, I need to be very thankful for my day and enjoy the hell out of my day. I need to, and this is for me, I need to take care of myself and get great sleep and give myself great water and great food. I need to foster relationships. I mean, so we just need to be aware and I think do more of the things we know are healthy. So because the environment is getting worse and worse to some degree for our health, we need to do more and more And I think as we do more and more, we start to reflect back on the environment, and the environment starts to shift and become positive, and we foster the health of the environment. So again, they all go together, but we need to recognize that technology is going to get very dangerous if we don't wise up and use things correctly. Turn off our cell phones, put them away. You don't need it as much as you think you do. You know, these type of things, these understandings, these realizations, that will propel us forward. But if we continue to get locked into our screens, and I mean, the kids these days, if we're encouraging them and we're not teaching them how to use the technology responsibly, I mean, they're in for a long, hard life. And maybe not even long, just a hard life, because they're not going to understand how to integrate with their environment. So we need to know this stuff. And, you know, it's up to us. I mean, if you want to live a short life, but and live through technology and impact the world in amazing ways, cool. Like that's just as cool of a life, I guess, as anybody else. But just understand what choices you're making and be aware. And there's no judgment. I mean, hell, I had about a half of a Coca-Cola yesterday. I know how crappy that stuff is, but you know, it was really good and I enjoyed it, and that's it. Right. So I think we just need to be aware, and the choices that we make, if we feel good about them, then great. But if I don't want to go work out because I hate working out and I don't want to do that right now, then maybe going and working out is not a good thing. Right? We have this idea that we need to push through all this crap. Perhaps you just need to do what you enjoy and enjoy what you do. And when you do that, then I think good things happen despite the science about what is good and what is bad, right? Because again, it comes back to the philosophy of this, which is you got one crack at this life. You might as well enjoy every day because all you have is today.
Yep. Agreed.
And tomorrow you have today. So,
I mean, just like that story you told in the beginning, it's got to be the best day every day.
And this is the awareness, right? That's all that is, right? And this goes back to Buddhism and all kinds of religious teachings and philosophical teachings and Greek philosophy, right? I mean, this is sort of stuff where it's like you have a choice. Do you want to be happy today? Do you want to enjoy the day? Do you want to be pissed off? Do you want to be resentful? Do you want to be vindictive? Right? Sure. What do you want to be today? And I think if you look at the people and the people that we talk to, they seem to enjoy each day. And one of the questions I asked them, I asked every single one of them, and 20 some odd people in four or five different countries, if they could offer me one piece of advice to live a long, healthy, happy life, what would it be? And an overwhelming majority of them said, maintain good relationships with those around you and hold no grudges. Yeah. That was their advice. 102-year-old says that to you. Are you going to not listen to them? You know?
Yeah.
So these are choices that we can make despite our environment, right?
Yeah. Very cool, Jason. Very cool. So I want to plug you one more time here and actually talk about the giveaway. Right. So the giveaway, it's going to be three interviews. Do they pick the interviews or they just selected interviews?
Yeah, they're selected. That we just kind of picked a couple good interviews that we thought people would really like, a little bit of a variety. And these are full length interviews. So, you know, we interviewed 90 something experts, 94 experts. A lot of them I think you've had on your podcast. Yeah. People will know these names. It's a pretty, I mean, I'm proud of it. It's a really insanely good cast of characters in this film, if you will. So these in the film, you know, you've got bits and pieces of these interviews, but there's so much that didn't make it in the film that we wanted to sort of make this as a part of the thing that we're offering. And so, so we're giving away, three full interviews, with some pretty good stuff in there, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, so the URL is humanlongevityfilm.com/3, the number three, three interviews that will be in the show notes. So you don't have to start searching and screw up the typing like I probably did before when I was talking about his website. But, you know, Jason, this has been an awesome conversation. You know, I know you got the countdown is on for this to come out, so I'm excited for you.
I appreciate it. It's been fun. I mean, the people we've shown it to a sort of a small audience, and it's been very well received. It's always funny. You don't know how people are going to receive this, right? Was it too science heavy? Is it too boring? Is it too long? Is it, you know, what is it? And so, seemed to resonate with people. I think it was a really cool thing. So it's very humbling to get that feedback, but also very exciting to see what this sort of full launch that we do, how that's going to be received. And I think I think people are ready for this message. I think people are ready to not get the fear message. And that's
ready. You wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be here if the message wasn't ready.
I agree. So. It's time to empower people. It's time to give people a message of health and a practical message of how it changed your life. Because you don't need doctors. You don't need practitioners. And I work as one. And you don't. It's already there. Like, we all have the power. So that's the idea.
So, Jason, I want to thank you so much. Lifestyle Locker wants to thank you so much. I can't wait to get this message out to the world as well with the Human Longevity film. So
thank you.
I'm going to check out here. I got another call coming in. And, I think I could stand for a long time and keep this conversation going. We can go all over the place.
Yeah, we'll have to do this again. Maybe I won't ramble as much as.
No, I like the rambling, man. This is good stuff. This is where I learn, and this is where the world learns. I mean, this is like a selfish thing for me if it's a podcast, but also a way for me to share magic with people.
Well, I really appreciate you giving us the platform, honestly.
You're very, very welcome. Locker Nation, how awesome was Jason? I'm so grateful that we have the platform to share people like him with the world, because people are living a long, healthy life, or lives, I should say, all around the world. And we have one of the sickest countries in the world here in the U.S., so people like Jason are sharing the truths in the world. So make sure you get over to humanlongevityfilm.com. Remember, not the way I messed it up during the interview, humanlongevityfilm.com. And he's also giving you something really cool. So here's the giveaway. There are 3 full-length interviews from experts that are actually in the film series. So go to humanlongevityfilm.com/3interviews. That's the number 3 interviews, and get these full-length interviews. You are going to absolutely love them. I've been lucky enough to actually see the show before it's been released, and it is fantastic. Dive into all the episodes. I do have a couple favorites, but we all should. Dive in, enjoy them, and see you soon, Lock Nation. Bye-bye.